Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this March 27th meeting of the K-12 Education Finance Division to order, please. Representative Erickson, traditionally you are the one who spends the most detailed time with the minutes, the most critical time, including the occasional punctuation change needed. Have you had an opportunity with this morning's, or with yesterday's minutes, I should say, the March 26th minutes?
Mr. Chair, I will move approval of the minutes from March 26th.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Erickson motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Erickson. Members, just a heads-up reminder of the day. We're meeting this morning. We like each other so much, we're meeting again this evening. Wash, rinse, repeat. We're doing that again tomorrow as well. So quality time with each other. We've got several bills to move through today. Time limits, I believe, are the guidelines for time are on your agendas as well as and posted publicly. So out of respect for everyone who's here, I hope that we can adhere to those as best we can. With that, Representative Sanstey, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 882 for inclusion in a future division report.
We usually say possible inclusion.
Possible, okay. I'm going to be ambitious on this one. Possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Sanstey.
House File 882 is a bill that proposes to increase the formula allowance by 3% in fiscal year 20 and fiscal year 21. This provides an increase of $189 per pupil in fiscal year 20 and $195 per pupil in fiscal year 21. House File 882 also ties future formula increases to inflation starting fiscal year 2022 and later based on the CPI. The per pupil basic formula is the largest source of revenue for our school districts, accounting for approximately 56% of a school district's total operating revenue. Since 2003, the formula has not kept up with inflation, and according to MDE, the fiscal year 19 formula allowance is $617 lower than the fiscal year 03 formula allowance after adjusting for pupil unit weighting changes in inflation. Adjusting the formula to inflation provides school districts predictability and stability, which they greatly need to be able to plan programming and making staffing decisions. With that today, I have several testifiers. Starting out is Dr. Michael McKenzie.
Dr. McKenzie, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Michael McKenzie. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've been a teacher for 30 years now, and I'm currently the president of the Wiper Lake Teachers Association. I'm here to testify in support of House File 882. As you know, not only does it increase the funding formula by 3% each year of the biennium, but it also ties the formula to inflation. Public schools are scrambling for resources. That's because we've had a 15-year history of underfunding our schools. One of the biggest problems is the state's share of funding hasn't kept up with inflation. It's 18% less than 2003 in real dollars. That means 93% of Minnesota's 330 school districts receive less per pupil aid in real dollars in 2019 than they did in 2003. Another problem is the chronic shortfall of special education funding. Minnesota school districts this year alone spent $750 million on special education costs the state and federal governments were supposed to pay for but didn't. In White Bear Lake, our yearly special education cross-subsidy is a bit more than $11 million now. So what does that mean for the schools? I can tell you what's happening in White Bear Lake. Budget reductions cause higher class sizes. They cause individual elective classes not to be offered. They cause support staff hours to be cut. They basically reduce schools to what's required instead of what's best. Imagine how the talks in this room would be different every 2 years if we tied the funding formula to inflation. Instead of starting the conversation about how we can afford cuts, we can begin by talking about how to make our schools better. We can begin by talking about investing in what our students need smaller class sizes, more student support like paraprofessionals, school counselors, nurses, social workers, and bringing back lost electives that inspire our students to continue on in education. Please support House File 882 so Minnesota can get closer to full funding of public schools and closer to the funding that our students deserve. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next testifier we have is David Law, superintendent from Anoka Hennepin. Mr. Law, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
I have an entourage, but we will be brief. I'm David Law, superintendent of schools for the Anoka Hennepin School District, and as I testify in support of this bill, I hope you enjoy the morning. I'm going to talk about the great work you have been doing. And I have brought the faces of public education with me today. To my right, a young man I've known for a little while, actually since birth. Rory is 3 years old. He's in his first year in preschool at Anoka Hennepin's Early Childhood Center. His teacher says he can identify letters and numbers, listen to instruction, and engage in activities. After each school day, Rory brings home work samples. This is either something he wrote, drew, or built. He's looking forward to his next year of preschool. To my left, a student I met at a fundraiser about a month ago, and just a sweetheart, Ariana. A fifth grade student at Sand Creek Elementary. She's a student who has grown in confidence over her 3 years since she started at Sand Creek. Her parents have seen her independent skills develop as well, which make them proud of her. Ari participates in one of our special education programs at Sand Creek Elementary and is showing personal growth in many areas because of her, partially due to the team effort between her parents and the special education team. Behind me, I have Sarah. Right behind me. I met Sarah at a student visit at our STEP Technical High School a little over a month ago. Sarah is a strong and ambitious student who's a full-time student as a junior from Champlain Park at our technical program. Within the past 7 months, Sarah has managed to successfully complete both levels of college automotive programming. During this time, she's repaired her father's brake, which included an entire rear and front brake drum job, something I personally can't do and something that's very advanced for high school students. Next is Sarah. George, if you would raise your hand. I met George at a listening session, too. George is a senior at Anoka Hennepin Technical High School, and for those people in the audience, I want to tell you an amazing story about George. George has been in the country for 18 months from Liberia, Monrovia. He's the oldest of four children who attend our school district. He has a passion for the automotive industry. He will earn his high school diploma this spring with 29 graduate credits in automotive technology earned at Anoka Technical College. 29 in 18 months. George works at Cornerstone Auto in Elk River and plans to open his own auto business in our community. Finally, behind me is Lumumba Ismail. I met Lumumba as a senior at Morehead State University 5 years ago. He's a graduate from Anoka High School and a social studies teacher, a student favorite. Lumumba, whose family came here from South Sudan in 1996, graduated from our school system, got a four-year degree, has a passion for working back in our school system, and is pursuing advanced degrees to move on in school leadership, although I'd hate to lose him in the classroom. I bring my entourage with me today not to talk about doom and gloom in public education. We need every dollar we can get. But as I've been down here testifying a dozen times about the things you'd like to see happen in public school, it's happening in Anoka Hennepin, and it's happening with your support. 3 and 3, and I know in tight budget times every nickel counts, but 3 and 3 provides these programs for these students and our future across our system. I'm passionate for our school, I'm proud of our students, and thank you for hearing this bill and entertaining it. I'm going to invite our board member, Bill Harvey, up next.
Thank you, Superintendent Law, and quite a powerful entourage that you brought with. Mr. Harvey, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, Bill Harvey, Anoka Hennepin School Board. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for the work that you do every day to support E-12 education and the funding. I am here very proud of David, who just spoke to you. My job is to represent the community and to hire him. His job is to administer to our taxpayers, our families, and our students within the Anoka-Hennepin School District. We're proud of the fact that we educate approximately 5% of the students in the state of Minnesota, and we have a reputation for being very frugal. Along with that, very frugal, and the work that you're doing go arm in arm. Because, for instance, 3 and 3 on the formula index to inflation, as we look at our finances and updates, it just keeps our nose above water. And any less than that, we're forced to make very tough decisions as a board on how to reallocate funds with that in mind. And I just wanted to put a face on that also after David did such a good job of putting a face on all the positive aspects of what we do every day. The challenge is, tonight I have a school board meeting, and a huge part of our agenda is to terminate probationary teachers. Because we don't have a consistent funding expectation, we have an expectation, but we can't count on the political nature of what you do to give us assurances that 3 and 3 and support for the special education cross-subsidy is going to be sufficient to administer the programs that we try so hard to work toward. In the fall of 2017, our district reached out to our taxpayers because our buildings were averaging 52 years of age. We had at one time almost 100 portable classrooms, and we wanted to try to do the right thing, secure our perimeters, update our buildings, and we asked for a levy from our taxpayers to support that. They supported us. At the meeting tonight, I have to terminate a lot of great educators. I know there are great educators sitting at this table. Thank you for serving. But we have to let go people that we worked so hard to get, teachers, young teachers with great talent, teachers of color, and it's tearing my heart out to have to make that decision tonight because of the budget ramifications that we're looking at. Thank you again for your work to make 3 and 3 something permanent and index to inflation something permanent and support for the education, special education cross-subsidy. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey, and thank you for your work on school board as well. We have Brandon Lunak, superintendent for Moorhead, next. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm Brandon Lunak, superintendent of Moorhead, and I'll just talk about the impact that 3 and 3 would have on our district. I believe you heard from the people before me, and I'll go into how it would impact Moorhead. One of the things that we're trying to focus on in Moorhead is increasing our counselors and social workers staffing. Currently, our staffing model is way behind what the national organizations recommend. And so for us, we would really take that 3 and 3 seriously and use that to incorporate more staffing into our student support services. And the other, you know, the other thing that it would go to address is the ever-growing special ed cross-subsidy, which I think the other three, the other folks in front of me have mentioned as well. Just from a planning standpoint, I just want to bring to your attention how that would change our planning. Currently, right now, we go through our budgeting process, which starts in November of the current school year with our enrollment projections. We forward that into what we plug into our enrollment model, and we determine what our new revenue might be based on those projections. And we have to continually put in a zero until we know, like in this year, because we don't know what we're getting in terms of legislative increases, we have to project zero until we actually get that number, which affects us greatly. And so the importance for us is very similar to what those other districts have shared, and any commitment that you can make to that 3 and 3 and ongoing and linking that to inflation would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent. Next up, I have Jim Bartholomew. Mr. Bartholomew, please state your name for the record, the organization you're with, and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And to start, I'd like to thank Representative Sandsteed for taking your time to talk about the bill with us. I'd like to briefly testify on one specific aspect of House File 882. It's contained in lines 1.13 through lines 1.17, and this would automatically increase the formula allowance by the rate of inflation. Our concern with this provision is that by providing automatic inflationary increases, your ability to manage future state budget commitments will be significantly limited. For example, what happens when the state next suffers through another recession and revenues come in significantly lower than expected? If the formula is automatically increased, we're concerned you'll lose flexibility to balance the needs of other state spending priorities. As a result, we'd ask that you not adopt the automatic inflationary increase, which would unnecessarily limit options available to future legislatures. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. And with that, I think we'll see, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Sands, do you have some comments, and then we'll go to member questions.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that I realize that this is a very ambitious bill, but I'm not ashamed to bring it forward because being in the classroom, even now, I know how important this is to all of our school districts. First of all, the formula increase is what we have heard across the board, our number one tool for school districts in being able to have flexibility to meet the unique needs of individual school districts. It's got to be on the funding formula. I understand Mr. Bartholomew's concern over tying to inflation, but I think it's actually the right thing to do in terms of what happens in the event of a downturn. Our schools remain intact. Our schools remain strong. And that's what we need across our state in public education. It is bold and it is ambitious, but I think we need to do it now. This is a big ship that we are trying to turn. And I think if you invest now, invest early, and invest wise, it will pay off in dividends. I also really would like to resonate the comments by Bill Harvey, the school board member. Stable funding helps with predictability and planning and staffing. It's not just hard on our school districts. When they have to make cuts, they have to place, we're coming up to the spring where we have ULAs. It's a terrible time for our districts, and it's a really terrible time for our teachers that we already know we have a shortage of. So the practice of having to put them on a ULA or let new talented teachers go, probationary teachers go, because the funding is not there, is just it's repeating a practice that we know doesn't serve our students or our districts well. They have to, but we need to do something different. And I truly, truly believe that adequate funding, tying it to inflation, isn't the perfect fix, but it is definitely a step in the right direction.
Thank you, Representative Sandsteed. Member questions. I have Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like Dr. McKenzie and Mr. Harvey to come back up.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Dr. McKenzie flew?
Yes.
Okay. I can ask Mr. Harvey here. Mr. Harvey, you said in your testimony that you're looking at pink slipping how many teachers?
I can't recall off the top of my head, but how many is too many? I think one is too many. I'm not trying to be snarky. I'm just saying that these are people that we've strived so hard to get, and I heard from a couple of our high school principals this week.
Well over 100.
Well over 100. Thank you, David.
Thank you. And maybe, Mr. Harvey, I hope you're the right one to ask, what's your cross-subsidy in Anoka-Hennepin right now?
Mr. Harvey?
I'm going to have David give me accurate figures here also. I know that our numbers.
You might as well pull up a chair.
Dollar.
Then state your name for the record, please, and then proceed.
Thank you for asking these questions, by the way.
David Law, Superintendent of Oklahoma, and we have pushed up towards $35 billion this year.
What was it? I'm sorry.
$35
million. $35 million. Is that our teacher that just came back to the desk?
No.
Okay. I just want to point these two areas out to our members to make sure that they see that this is, I'm one of these districts that is $29 million cross-subsidy. We are laying off 20 teachers, and these are not new teachers. We are laying off over seven nurses and a number of paras. This may fix the problem. We don't know. It's a late problem, and I'm concerned. And Representative Sandsteed, I so much appoint, I really respect you bringing this in, because that's why I think many of us suburban people were sent to the legislator to deal with this issue and this issue alone. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Representative Edelson, and then Juergens, Kunesh Podein, and Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Sandstein, for bringing this bill. I appreciate your comments. And to that, I hope we can get as close to a 3-3 as we can. I truly do. But I wanted to thank Superintendent Law for bringing the students in from the young to the graduating student. I think that oftentimes we debate policy here. We think about things in numbers, and we don't think about them in students. So I really appreciated seeing the students, and I want to thank the students for being here, too.
Thank you. I hope there's a day brightener. They're awesome. They're great to work with.
Thank you, Mr. Law.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Harvey?
If I could add a comment to the previous question, too. In addition to terminating probationary teachers, and David said over 100, we're also looking at budget scenarios based on all the potential outcomes. And for us in particular, and I spoke to the fact that we do have a reputation for being efficient and being frugal, but anything less than 3-3 and significant support on special education cross-subsidy, we're looking at significant cuts of existing teachers and existing programs. Even at 3-2 with significant support from the governor, I provided that to the tax chair a while ago, basically letting him know the support is critical for us, and especially also, as I alluded to before, reaching out to our local taxpayers, and they supported us in our bond and our levy to do this. We're quite literally going to have to give that back. And that's, as a board member, very disappointing to tell the community, thank you for voting yes, but because of not receiving what we consider adequate funding at the state level, we're now going to give some of those progress pieces back where we hired additional teachers for programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fratt. Representative Hewitt, you had a quick follow-up?
I did have a quick follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you for the – yes, we're in a process of a levy, too, and I just wanted one last simple question of your – how big is your class sizes in the high school right now?
Mr. Harvey.
Thank you. We have some of the highest class sizes at the secondary level in the metro. And we were really hopeful to buy that down even a little bit through the levy that was passed through our taxpayers. But if we're at 3-2 or less, we're going to lose ground on that.
Okay, and last statement would be that I know Rosemont Apple Valley, we're at 40 to 45 per honors class in ninth grade in civics. I'm going to say civics. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, yesterday I had some teachers from my district in to visit with me, and not all of them were special education teachers, but every single one of them talked about how the lack of special education funding impacted their ability to teach all of the kids. As we've talked about in here 100 times, how because of that cross-subsidy, school districts like yours, like mine, like all of ours, are using their general fund dollars to help fund special education. And so funding, nobody is disputing the importance of funding. I do have some questions, Representative Sandsteed, on the calculations here, because online we're doing more than just the rate of inflation. Line 1.15 and 1.16 says 1 plus the percentage change in the consumer price index. So if the inflationary rate is 3%, the increase would be 4%. If the increase is 2%, inflation is 2%, the increase would be 3%. Can you explain how you arrived at that number, where this isn't just an inflationary increase, it's more than an inflationary increase? And could you just help us with that, please?
We're going to phone a friend.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're going to phone a friend with Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Juergens, the one is actually added to the percentage. So the percentage doesn't go up by 1%. It's 1 plus the percentage, which in this case would be 3. So you'd be taking 1.03 times the formula. So it's the 3% inflation rate. But writing 1 times that is a simpler way than saying use that amount, add 3% to it. So it does the same thing, but it keeps that rate at the rate of inflation. And the one is, if it were a 3% rate, the number would be 1.03 times the current formula.
So not adding a percentage.
Not adding a percentage point, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Yep. Strong.
Thank you for the question. Representative Nishpudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. As you all know, I myself am an active teacher. We started out the school year with a $10.6 million deficit, and we felt that impact the very first day we walked in for our teacher preparation. For the months that I was there, it was a very difficult couple of months just trying to manage the number of students that we had, because as Representative Hewitt alludes, our class sizes are growing, our resources are diminishing, and we're looking for the best educational outcome that we can for our students. And as we're talking about providing the proper nutrition for our students, when we're talking about being able to meet the mental health needs of our students as well as the staff, all of those things take money. And I know Representative Sandstead and I can attest to the diminishing quality of education in a broad sense when it comes to, like, thinking of the liberal arts. I'm a library media specialist. Representative is a music teacher, and we see those really important, vital specialists and support staff going by the way exchange for that elusive, incredible testing score that we're all going after. And we're not looking at the whole student. And we're not looking at the well-being of the staff. And I really appreciate this bill and the move towards trying to fund our schools, or fully funding our schools, and making sure that not only are our special ed kids meeting, getting the things that they need, but that all of our students are, so that they really are a well-rounded 21st century educated individual. And of course, as we always say, those kids are our future. And in order to get what we want in our future, we need to be investing in them at this point right now. And so I want to thank you again for bringing this forward. And I really hope we take that bold step and get back to really fully funding our educational system in the way that it should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erickson is our last one on the list, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandstead, for bringing forth this proposal. I'm wondering, have you considered how you're going to ensure that there's parity between the metro and the non-metro schools, considering we have compensatory aid, and so much of what drives up more funding for metro is based on the free or reduced lunches?
Madam Chair and members, that is a great question, and I appreciate it very much. This is what I see as being the first step in fixing funding for education. I think this is the first step that we need to do that brings the necessary changes that all of our school districts are looking for. It is not the only step. And I think what comes next is going to be dealt with through either a task force or a work group or something that's looking at formula fund or the funding across the board. I think there are many changes, as I have testified to before, that need to be made, but I think this is the one that we need probably most desperately, and it allows the flexibility across the state from district to district to address the unique needs of every single school district. And it puts us on a path, it puts us on a trajectory to offset instability in the event of a downturn in our economy. So, more to come.
Madam Chair, follow-up.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Harvey, please. As a school board member, Mr. Harvey, you're going to have to do some, if this becomes law, you're going to have to do some future projections. So what does a board do, just very, very briefly, to anticipate this kind of funding increase and then based on inflation? You know, what will you do? Because you're still going to have all those costs and they're going to rise and you're going to be negotiating higher salaries for everybody. So what will you do as a board?
Mr. Harvey.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. So we do this currently, and we run a number of different scenarios, which was the document I held up at all the different levels. But once again, I so appreciate this legislation being brought forth because it does not catch us up from way back to 2003, probably. I'm trying to remember the numbers there, but we're to a point where we experience devastating cuts every time we fall short of a 3-3. If 3-3 were indexed to inflation and made permanent, it would give us the stability to make choices based on programming. It doesn't change the fact that our negotiations with our bargaining units will still have to be realistic, but we've had a building process over the last couple of years where the relationship with our bargaining units and our school board and our administration has become much more healthy and transparent. And the realities of those collaborative discussions and negotiations, I'll even say to the point where I think it was 2 years ago, I was knocking on the doors of some of your offices, walking arm in arm with our representative from Minocqua Hennepin Education, Minnesota. So we were walking in together saying 3-3 is what we're both asking for, what we both need as organizations. And I've represented Minnesota School Boards Association and the Association of Metro School Districts and Schools for Equity in Education and served in various roles in all those organizations. And we are all singing the same song. So thank you. The question is great. But it wouldn't change how we do things. It would just give us some stability to not have to ride this roller coaster, and it wouldn't be so painful to our community when we've worked so hard to secure young new talent and teachers of color and special education teachers. And tonight, when I have to terminate over 100 of those positions, it makes it tough to sleep. It really is not my ideal situation. We love to celebrate all the great things we're doing in Anoka Hennepin and some of your other educators. Many of you are, I know, thank you. But we're very proud of our enrichment programs. In Anoka Hennepin, our music program is some of the best in the state. My children have benefited from that personally. Our library media program and everything that we do, we're very proud of. We've held tight at a time where our student population has become much more diverse. Our achievement gap has not increased. It's shrunk slightly. And we strive so hard to see progress with all that. So from a board member, I'm proud of our community, I'm proud of our teachers, our schools, our parents, our students, but it really makes it challenging when we have an inconsistent funding mechanism. And so once again, as the representative stated so well, 3-3 and support for special education and index to inflation's going to go up and down, it'll follow that. That is the starting point. That is not where I see this ending, but it's certainly what's needed. Thank you. I didn't mean to ramble, but I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yep.
And I just want to
your final word, and then we're going to move on.
I just want to make one quick comment on that as a follow-up here. When our state can enable our school districts in the way that they need to not have this roller coaster effect, I think that is going to be pivotal and in incenting or inviting people back into the profession. There are many young, talented people who are concerned about going into education for the fear of being cut. They don't want to invest and have school loans and debt only to have to ride this continual roller coaster. Closing word?
Yes, please.
You're welcome. Thank you. One person told me once upon a time, what you value, you budget for. What you value, you budget for. And I think right now, I know that this committee values education greatly. I know that. And so I'm going to ask you all to be bold and not be afraid to take this very bold step. And I would appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Sanstead. Representative Sanstead renews her motion to lay over House File 882 for possible inclusion in the future division report. Next up, we have Representative Sandell with House File 1190. And I believe the motion will be the same. So, Representative Sandell, would you like to move House File 1190 for possible inclusion in a Education Division report?
Madam Chair, I would. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Representative Sandell moves House File 1190 for possible inclusion in a future division report. Do we have the bill before us? Would you like to proceed, please?
Well, Madam Chair, thanks very much for the opportunity to come before this committee and talk about House File 1190. It is a really a win-win-win-and-win proposition. Schools, students, colleges, universities, moms and dads, and certainly students have benefited from the concurrent enrollment program over the years. House File 1190 provides support to maintain and strengthen the concurrent enrollment program throughout the state. The program gives students the opportunity to enroll in college classes taught by their high school faculty and receive college credits at no additional cost to the students. The program is enormously popular. It serves to strengthen the school's curriculum, encourage students to try out being a college student, and reduces the financial burden of college tuition. It's a good deal all around. Dr. Joe Nathan, a friend and colleague of mine for a long while, is here with me today. Joe and former Governor Rudy Perpich are perhaps the two individuals who are most responsible for creating ways to broaden choices for high school students in Minnesota and possibly around the country. Joe also has with him two terrific students, Brooke Flo and Kalika Rogers, who I've met and who are terrific representatives of people who have benefited from the concurrent enrollment program. In addition, Mr. Roger Aronson of the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association will describe some of the financial history and of our request. We'll be brief, but I don't want to overlook the really importance of this great program for all of our districts.
Thank
Joe, do you want to start?
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my apology for my voice today. I have been in bed for the last 4 days, but I thought this was really critical, and so I wanted to be here to show my support for your work and for Representative Sandell's work. I will be brief. I think that many of you have this document in your packet. It's a document some of you have seen before. It shows the percentage of young people who participate in at least one PSEO, post-secondary enrollment options, or concurrent enrollment class, and shows a dramatic difference between the overall graduation rate in high school between those students and students who did not participate. On the back side, so for example, African American, it's 58% who did not participate overall, versus 88% who did in at least one class, American Indian 49 versus 88, and so on and so forth. And some people have said, well, that's because the kids who participate in college in the schools or PSEO are the most motivated kids, so naturally they're going to be ones to graduate. If you turn to the back side of this page, or it might be a separate page in your packet, it does be back-to-back, great. You'll see two quotes that I want to highlight from massive amount of research. The first is a study that was done here at the University of Minnesota. It's about three-quarters of the way down. Preliminary results of a UM study found that students from low economic households who took advanced courses did just as well as first-term and first-year GPAs, that's grade point average, as more affluent students who did not take these. And then, and this is really encouraging, because it's not just about entering, it's about graduating. CIS and PSEO students tend to graduate at faster rates than students from similar backgrounds. These are programs that have a huge impact overall in the state. They have a huge positive impact on low-income kids and kids of color, and they help all kinds of kids. To further illustrate this, we have two wonderful examples, Minnesota Public High School graduates, who are going to tell you a little bit about their experience.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hey, Madam Chair. My name is Khalid Rogers. I'm a current student of Metro State. I've graduated from Gordon Parks High School and graduated also from St. Paul College. I've done a couple different classes when it comes to CIS, one of them being a writing studio, also a public speaking course as well. both of which I got all A's in through the U of M. And to state just the importance of it, I'm sure you already know, but this pretty much gave me insight or more or less foresight of what I can do in the future. I already knew that education was a powerful tool to get to where I wanted to go, but it was more of how was I going to get there. Being a first-generation college student was very, it wasn't discouraging, but it was okay. I haven't even held tens of thousands of dollars, so how am I going to owe somebody that? I didn't want to owe someone $5, so let alone thousands. So for me, it was, how is this going to be possible? And so I challenged my school, Gordon Parks. I wanted to give it a try and try CIS classes. I did Accuplacer, level in college, algebra, writing, and science. So for me, it was a no-brainer to give it a try. So to my surprise, I did very well, and that's where I met Joe. He wanted to interview me. He was like, yeah, how was your experience? And I gave him a pretty good interview from what he told me. And he was like, what do you think about going around and, you know, telling other individuals who look like you as well that may be afraid of the opportunity and tell them about your experience? And so I did. And that caused me to go around the tour of the Twin Cities, speaking at places such as this, school board meetings, and just going to schools and talking about my experience and showing them that it is possible, whether an individual can see it or if they put their fears on you, may think that that might not be an opportunity for you based off of their own experience or others, their experience as well. So for me, it was just very important to do that. And I just got back. So I got my own life skills. I created a life skills consulting company. And the purpose of that is to increase the level of expectations in our community. There's like a big, huge spirit of mediocrity, and I noticed that in high school. And for my peers and those who weren't able to, at the time, and I know they will in the future, hopefully, to reach their full potentials based off of just the expectation being so low of them. So they began to accept it. And for me, that was something I couldn't accept. And I had powerful mentors such as Joe and countless others who believed in me and helped me see the value I had in myself. And that's a great opportunity that CIS has also created for me as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brooke LaFleau, and I am the Vice President of People for PSEO. Post-secondary enrollment and dual credit options help students prepare and get a head start on college and also reduce the cost of post-secondary education to students and families. In my senior year at St. Paul Johnson High School, I participated in CIS, College in the Schools, through the University of Minnesota. Upon graduating high school in 2011, I attended McAllister College here in St. Paul. Although McAllister unfortunately did not accept my CIS courses from the U of M, I felt substantially more prepared to take on the rigorous college courses offered at McAllister. I will reference my CIS freshman writing course as an example. That class alone prepared me mentally for the expectations of the college workload. In one semester, I wrote more papers than I had during any other previous school year. I was constantly writing, editing, revising, rewording, and checking myself before someone else got the opportunity to. This process is vital to college survival, to be able to work independently, to be responsible to your work, to do the work, and then do it again but better, to manage your time and to believe in yourself. These are important skills that helped me do exceptionally well during my first year at college and carried me through my master's degree. I believe that the early exposure to college-level work not only challenged me as a student, but also provided a first-hand experience for a post-secondary educational future. Without this preparation in high school and early exposure to college-level work, I may not have been as successful in my post-secondary experiences. After spending 2 years at McAllister, I transferred to Tulane University in New Orleans to complete my Bachelor's of Science in Neuroscience and Anthropology. The following year, I completed 2 international Montessori diplomas while earning my master's in education at 24 years old. I'm very grateful that post-secondary enrollment and dual credit options existed for me, and I hope that they may continue to be vital options for students now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Sandsteed, or not Sandsteed, I did it again, Sandell. Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chair, members, my name's Roger Aronson. I'm here to testify in favor of the college and the schools bill. Here are a couple things that I want to draw the committee's attention to. Obviously, you've seen the testimonials from the students. What happens with this appropriation is we get $4 million. The secondary school principals believe this is one of the strongest college credit programs that we have in Minnesota. But that $4 million gets divided up. It says we get $150 a student, but as the handout that you have that's been prepared by the staff shows you, we actually get about $50 a student because that $150 is prorated out over all of the kids that take the classes. The structure of these classes is very unique. Our high school teachers actually get approved by the college. Our teachers teach the class technically under the supervision of a college instructor, then the college charges us per student for the class. So when you give us $50 to pay for the class, the University of Minnesota charges us $145 a class. Now that $4 million has been static in the system for quite some time. In terms of relative to the $150. So what we're really looking for is to have that number catch up. This does a lot to keeping our kids in the schools. This works very well in the metropolitan programs. It works very well in the rural programs. And it allows kids to get this college credit from our teachers and have the high school experience at the same time. This is really a good program. There's been a bit of neglect in the funding of it through the years. And maybe that's our fault in part as well, but we really want you to look closely at this in the mix as you make the decisions as how you're spending things. So we thank you, Mr. Chair, and we appreciate very much that this bill is brought forward this year.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify either for or against House File 1190? Seeing none. I think Representative Sandell, brief closing comments.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thanks very much for the time. I'm really pleased and proud to be with this group of people, these two terrific students. Dr. Nathan and Mr. Aronson have described, I think, the nature of the request and the future that we're looking forward to. So, Mr. Chair, thanks very much for the opportunity to request that this be held over.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Sandell renews his motion that House File 1190 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. To the youth who spoke, thank you very much. We prize hearing your voices in the education finance decisions that we make as a committee. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move 1969 for possible inclusion in a division report. And
thank you very much.
I have the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erickson moves the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment to get the bill in the form that she prefers. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 1969 A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Erickson, to your bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an oral amendment that I would like to have incorporated on line 1.19, where it says in item C, 400,000, I would like to change that amount to half. Since I have deleted the appropriation, then I don't think it's very relevant to have an amount listed there. So if that could be incorporated, I'd appreciate it.
So, Representative Erickson, to clarify, since I immediately scratched out 400,000 and put 200,000 in, you mean the word half?
Mr. Chair and members, I want the word H-A-L-F, half.
All right.
I'll accept.
So, Representative Erickson moves her oral amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. So, your bill as amended and amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm not going to say very much because I think the testifiers are going to prove to you that Science for Scientists is a great program for our low-income and rural schools where we can bring in our local scientists, and we have a lot of them, into the classroom to show our students in STEM programs what an exciting area this is for learning. And this program will assist our teachers in training, but most of all, the students will have this real access to scientists. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Ms. French, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. My name is Carlene French. I am a geologist and Director of Development for the Minnesota Office of Science from Scientists. And I want to thank you very much for considering our organization for grant funding in House File 1969. Science from Scientists is a nonprofit organization that specializes in during school STEM enrichment for third through eighth grade students. We were founded in Boston in 2002, and we've since expanded to San Mateo, California, and Bloomington, Minnesota. We've demonstrated program scalability and have a record of measurably improving student aptitudes and attitudes in STEM. Our goals are to work with and within the existing education system to close STEM achievement gaps and substantially increase the number of students pursuing STEM careers and trades. And what do I mean by STEM achievement gaps in Minnesota? Well, according to 2017 ACT data, only 24% of Minnesota students taking the exam met the ACT benchmark for college readiness in STEM. Racial and ethnic minority groups were 3 to 15 times less likely to meet the benchmark than white students, and rural students were 2 times less likely to meet the benchmark than suburban students. Our During School program can be used as a platform for communities across Minnesota to create their own community-based STEM education and workforce solutions. In this program, as Representative Erickson stated, we hire real, personable STEM professionals from local businesses and universities, and yes, I do mean personable STEM professionals, and we assign them to partner schools for the entire year. Two instructors visit a school 18 times per year, that's every other week, to guide each class of students of 1 to 2 grade levels through hands-on STEM lessons that are aligned with the academic standards, and we provide all of the materials. We have over 90 lessons in our library in all domains of STEM, and teachers choose the lessons that best complement their own curricula. We're STEM professionals, and we're not teachers. I need to emphasize that. So classroom teachers are with us in the classroom, and their collaboration is vital to the program's success. We measure the success of the program by tracking student scores on state standardized assessments in science, by administering pre- and post-lesson quizzes, and by conducting teacher and student surveys. Our During School program also can be combined with teacher professional development such that the teachers replace scientists in the classroom over time. We're currently serving 1,441 students in 16 elementary and middle schools. Most schools are located in the metro area. One is located in Ogama on the White Earth Reservation. We have over 20 schools on our waiting list. Program metrics for the 2017-18 academic year indicated a 16% improvement from pre- to post-lesson quizzes. That's almost a 2-grade level improvement. 6% improvement on 5th-grade MCA scores in science, and 89% of teachers reporting increased student aptitude and attitude in STEM and related careers. Most of our funding comes from corporate grants and is geographically restricted to nearby neighborhoods. So legislative funding would be less restrictive than corporate and foundation funding and would allow us to provide more equitable access to quality STEM education to students of color and students in rural areas or native communities. Half the funds would be used to support the program in the metro area, and half the funding would support program expansion into rural areas. And grant funds potentially could help us reach dozens of schools and thousands of students over the next 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. French. Principal Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Anderson. I'm the proud principal of Battle Creek Elementary School on the east side of St. Paul, in our backyard. Currently, we have 538 students at Battle Creek. 92% of those students are students of color, and the racial breakdown is very diverse. We have about 44% Asian students, 11% Hispanic students, 33% black students, and that's half African American students and half African immigrant students. We have 9% white students and 2% Native students. As you can hear, it's a very diverse place, and Science from Scientists has come to help us work with our mission and our vision, which is learning powered by STEAM. And STEAM is science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. It's what kids get excited about and why they're excited to come to Battle Creek. And the Science from Scientists program has helped us immeasurably in many ways, but I'll tell you three or four. One way is the super exciting hands-on science activities that they bring to us every other week. They go to the computer lab, which is decked out with everything from dry ice and all kinds of interesting materials to using real science tools to measure effects of experiments that they're doing with the scientists. So the super cool, exciting learning is the probably the number one benefit. Number two, they get to meet a scientist. A lot of our students are limited by their experience. If you don't know what an engineer is or does, you are not going to be thinking, boy, I really want to be an engineer, or a chemist, or a geologist, or a biologist. And they get to meet all of these scientists over the course of 2 years, because they do this in their fourth and fifth grade. The last thing is it brings them to college-level thinking. If you go to our website at Battle Creek Elementary School, there's a little video on there, and a girl named Lillian says she has big eyes, and she's looking out, and she says with full authority, when you drop the dry ice into the warm water, it desublimates and forms a cloud. And she's like, I'm like, what is desublimates? And I'm sure people in this room were thinking the same thing, and a fifth grader is using vocabulary with such authority. The final benefit is our teachers learn all of the lessons along with the students, and they're able to replicate those. And so we can, in the future, trade out the modules, and the teachers can now teach the modules that they've learned in conjunction with teaching them with the scientists. So it's teacher professional development, it's scientist exposure, and it's just great, fantastic learning for kids. So thank you,
Mr. Anderson. Ms. Hagenberger, if I got that right.
You did.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Susanna Hagenberger, and I'm a doctoral candidate in biochemistry and biophysics at the University of Minnesota, and I'm one of the scientist instructors for Science from Scientists. So I wanted to share with you what it's like in the classrooms by telling you a little bit about the two placements, the two schools I'm in this year. One is an alternative middle school and high school in St. Paul, which you can imagine is a fairly difficult school to teach at. And one is a STEAM school in Bloomington, which is a very different placement. So when I first arrived at the alternative school in St. Paul, the students made it very clear they did not want us there. The science program was not that developed. The teacher was a first-year teacher, and it was very hard initially. But things have really changed since we've been there for almost 6 months. Now when I go in with my eyeballs for an eyeball dissection lesson, the security guard who lets me in knows we've got the eyeballs, and everyone's really excited. And to go from students not even removing their earbuds for us to teach to go from them asking for more eyeballs to dissect was a really big deal at such a difficult school. At my other placement, the STEAM school in Bloomington, were perhaps too effective. When I was there for our first lesson this year, one of the fourth graders told me he'd already done this experiment. And I thought that was really interesting because we have original lessons. These are not lessons other teachers are teaching. And he told me that his brother had Science from Scientists last year and brought the experiment home and did it with his family. So this is telling me that we are teaching the next generation of scientists, and they're actually teaching the next generation. So that tells me that we're doing what we're setting out to do.
Thank you very much. This is a public hearing. Pardon me. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1969?
Good year.
Seeing none, questions from members? It's a quiet bunch today. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I ask you for support. I know the money's going to be tight, which is why I removed the appropriations and changed the word in line 1.19. But I think you can see what this does for our students. And we should really be focused on our learners and on our students. And what a great opportunity as we are transitioning from our science standards now into our kind of next generation standards, although they won't be purely next generation. But this provides that option for students to have these opportunities for hands-on and to learn under experts. So I hope we consider that as we think about the future of our students. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. And with that, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 1969, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a division report. Representative Lean. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move House File 2110 be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future division report?
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Lean, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Appreciate hearing this bill today, House File 2110. And the need for this bill was brought to my attention by Superintendent Brandon Lunak, who you all are already familiar with today, from the Moorhead Public School District. After the district held a successful bond vote in 2015 to add on to the middle school in Moorhead, which was first constructed in 2004. The new square footage has the effect of lowering the average building age in the Moorhead School District, which would reduce the amount of long-term facilities maintenance revenue the district would receive from the state. However, the district is not reducing any existing square footage used for educational purposes. The net result is that the district would have to maintain more square footage with less revenue from the state. I understand other districts around the state are facing a similar situation, and this change in law would be a one-time statewide correction rather than having to address this issue for individual districts one at a time. Mr. Chair, committee members, I do have a technical author's amendment that I'd like to take up at this time.
Yes, the chair will move the H2110A1 amendment to be before the committee. Representative Lean, anything to say about the amendment?
The amendment was caught by nonpartisan staff and I as we were walking through the bill a couple days ago and just clarifying language.
All right. Thank you very much. Any discussion to the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion opposed. Motion prevails.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I will now walk through the bill. Section 1 eliminates old language in Subdivision 1, paragraphs A and B, that was in state law for fiscal years 2017 and 2018. Changes to the newly proposed paragraph A remove the existing definition for district's average building age to 35 years and inserts new language for district's building age index. The newly proposed paragraph B defines the new district's building age index as the greater of 1, the lesser of 1, or the ratio of the district's average building age for the most recent year for which data is available to 35 years, or 2, the district's building age index for the previous year. The newly proposed paragraph C puts certain conditions in place that a district has to meet for the new building age index or the building age index for the fiscal year immediately prior to the addition of district square footage to be used for calculating long-term facilities maintenance revenue, whichever would be greater. And the results of this change in law would hold districts harmless in the amount of long-term facilities maintenance revenue they receive in the event square footage is added onto district buildings without a reduction in overall square footage used for educational purposes. Section 2 of the bill provides a cleanup of obsolete language that was in law for fiscal years 2017 and 2018. And, Mr. Chair, committee members, I can now stand for questions or allow Superintendent Lunak to make some comments.
Superintendent, welcome. I'm apparently back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Sir. Thank you. I'm Brandon Lunick, superintendent of Moorhead Schools, and I'd like to thank you for listening to me once again. In 2015, we did have a successful bond. We did add, Mr. Lean said, an addition to the middle school at our Horizon Middle School site, but we also built a new elementary school that year as well, so we officially added almost 300,000 square feet to our footprint. And just to give you an idea of where we're at, in pay, from pay 16 to pay 19, the Moorhead Area Public Schools, in because of the formula and the current language that it's set up in, stands to lose just north of $1.4 million in deferred maintenance to maintain our facilities. And we're maintaining more square footage with less revenue, so I appreciate you allowing me this time to explain where we're at in terms of Moorhead. And I truly agree with Mr. Lean that this is a fix for all districts moving forward, not just Moorhead today. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 2110? Member questions? Again, it's a quiet. Representative Marquardt. Oh,
thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Lean. And so, I mean, the bottom line is that this form, the long-term facility maintenance program is great. Schools, when we started this, it was super. But it penalizes school districts that are adding on for whatever reason they need to do so. And so they actually have way more square footage, but now they're actually going to lose money to maintain those facilities. So it just needs a fix here. And I don't know what I missed the beginning, so I don't know what the total cost, but maybe there's even a phase in or something that could be worked out ultimately to this. But it is something that if you have facilities, you have to maintain them, and the formula now is going to penalize you if you need to grow. So I'm hoping we can do something with this.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Lean, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I appreciate your time and attention on this bill today, and I'd ask for your consideration of support. Thank you.
With that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion that House File 2110, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Thank you, Representative Lean. Thank you, Superintendent.
What district number is Warren, you know?
Representative Lee? Ah, very good. Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 2325 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in division report?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Lee, no amendment, am I correct?
Oops, Mr. Chair, do have the A1 amendment.
My apologies. Right there in our packets. Representative Pryor, would you please move the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the A1 amendment.
Thank you very much. This is an author's amendment to get the bill in the form you prefer?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the author's A1 amendment, 2325A1? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Lee, to your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 2325. Excuse me. The bill provides an increase to the adult basic education funding, and the amendment that was just put on changes the calculation of growth and contact hours from a 10-year rolling average to the prior year's contact hours. And the bill creates a process to allow adult basic education funding to grow when the K-12 Formula 8s grow or when the ABE contact hour grows, but never by more than 3%. And the effect on this on the ABE's system will be to provide some compensation for cost increases due to inflation. And members, ABE services are cost effective because improving literacy and educational skills helps families in poverty increase their earnings and achieve economic self-sufficiencies. Moreover, parents and especially mothers who gain literacy skills are more likely to have a positive influence on their children's academic achievement, helping to break the cycle of poverty. And as you will hear from a testifier, I just want to say that this is really important for a lot of our families in the state of Minnesota. And I still remember a conversation that I had with a Minneapolis family of a Somali community member talking about how excited she was to, you know, be able to take some of these courses over at the Minneapolis Public School building, and, you know, after that, going back to her workplace over at the airport, and how the courses does help her in her interaction with her employer and her colleagues at the airport. And so I just feel like this is really important, and I want to turn it over to my testifier. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you Ms. Walters?
Yes.
Excellent. Would you please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Karen Walters. I serve as legislative chair for Literacy Action Network, which is a statewide professional advocacy association for adult basic education in Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of HF 2325, which would tie our annual ABE funding increases to K-12 funding increases. So Minnesota ABE provides adults with educational opportunities to acquire and improve their literacy skills necessary to become self-sufficient and participate effectively as productive workers, family members, and citizens. We offer services for low-skilled adults, including GED, state competency-based high school diploma, and English language learning, among other services. A major theme of all ABE programming is the development and integration of career pathway programming, which is designed to help adults prepare for employment and/or participate in higher education. ABE is funded primarily through state funding. This funding is administered via a formula that's developed with statewide input, which provides attempts to provide fair and equitable access to ABE in greater Minnesota and in the metro area. The formula is actively supported by the vast majority of ABE providers throughout Minnesota. Since the formula was developed, the cumulative inflation rate has been just under 40%. There has been no inflationary adjustment for ABE during this time. This lack of funding has increasingly affected the provisions of ABE services. For example, 3/4 of all ABE teachers are part-time. School districts and nonprofit programs struggle to provide crucial services in a high-quality manner with ever-increasing expenses and stagnant funding. Over time, the ability of ABE to meet the educational needs of low-skilled adults in Minnesota has eroded due to decreased funding. The services we are being asked to provide are increasing in cost and complexity. Due to the low unemployment rate, the basic skills students we are seeing often deal with multiple barriers that require more intensive services. And career pathway education requires sophisticated skill training, generally in partnership with the state college system and workforce programs. A significant amount of collaboration and coordination is required, and teachers with specialized knowledge must be hired. The cost of this bill is quite minimal in the context of overall education funding. However, the funding requested is crucial in providing ABE services in a high-quality, effective manner to Minnesotans who are trying to improve their skills to become employed in a rapidly changing economy. Thank you for your consideration today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Walters. Ms. Rudmanis? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Renata Ritmanis, and I'm the president of Literacy Action Network and also the ABE supervisor for St. Paul Public Schools. Thank you for letting me speak today. An estimated 250,000 Minnesota residents need English as a second language services. Minnesota ABE programs have extensive experience and expertise working with immigrant populations as they arrive in Minnesota, helping them increase their English proficiency and obtain citizenship. ABE services also help new Americans obtain high school equivalency and prepare for post-secondary education and training toward higher paid, in-demand careers such as nursing and welding. ABE offers career pathways, an approach that integrates basic skills education, post-secondary training, and support services. These programs thrive on local partnerships, including ABE, colleges, workforce centers, social service providers, and employers. Together, partners design sequences of educational offerings that are manageable for working adults and lead to careers in high-demand, well-paying jobs. In this way, ABE addresses the emerging skills gap. ABE also addresses the K-12 achievement gap by lifting families out of poverty and giving parents the academic and advocacy skills they need to support their children. Adult education is no less valuable than the rest of our education programs. Not increasing funding for our state programs is leading to some programs seeking special appropriations for their districts. This does not lead to an equitable distribution of funds, as everyone has similar needs. Such targeted allocation over time threatens the viability of the ABE formula to continue to provide equitable access to ABE services in all parts of Minnesota, and I urge you to support this bill. With me today is an ABE student, Layla Ahmad, and she is going to tell you about what ABE services have meant for her and her family.
Ms. Ahmad, please come forward. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Layla Ahmad. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Ms. Ahmad, I think we need you to lean a little closer to the microphone. We want to be able to hear you well.
I'm sorry.
No, quite all right.
Thank you for letting me to be in front of you speaking today. My name is Layla Ahmed, and I come from Somalia 22 years ago with no English and little math. I couldn't have a job because of my English. Because of my safety, I couldn't read and write. For my safety, I couldn't. They couldn't hire me because of a lot of machines, assemblies. ABE program had helped me to have a better job. I am a BCA right now. I can have the job I wanted. I can easily do my application, and I have the better job right now. And I am able to help my children homework. I have my firstborn child is dental hygiene, and I have a high school child who want to be in engineering, and I'm able to help his homework because of ABE program, because of Hub Center existence. My child would not have a frustration to have hard time with his homework. I'm still Hub Center student. I had a child who go to child care, and I could have easily access my child and see my children. I was breastfeeding at the time. Right now, I want to continue in my education and contribute to this society. I want to be a social worker and continue my education. But thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your coming before the committee today. Tamara Sieve, I'm doing it again. My apologies.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tamara Sieve.
Thank you.
That's very good. At least you didn't say Steve. That happens quite a bit.
We were really close. Thank you for your generosity. Please proceed with your testimony.
I am the Director of Community Education for Bloomington Public Schools, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Community Education Association. So thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of HF 2325. Adult basic education is a key program that community education supports and values. ABE provides an education for adult learners in employment skills and provides a starting point for initial entrance into the workforce, promotion in their current employment, and re-entry into the workforce. ABE provides second chances to our adult learners and supports the economic development in Minnesota. Adult learners are able to get the tools that they need to move forward in their life to be self-sufficient and participate effectively as productive workers, family members, and citizens. In recent years, career pathways for education and for adult learners who lack basic skills to gain living and wages and employment has been a central focus for adult basic education. People before me have testified on some of those pathways. Adult basic education partners with DEED, Career Force Centers, local college, counties, and businesses to build pathways to jobs that are in high demand. A big part of the job gap in our economy is at the lowest end of the spectrum. So we're preparing many of our learners to enter jobs that are currently going unfilled. Local businesses are clearly asking for more workers, and we have a pipeline ready to go. We just need more resources to make it happen. Examples of career pathways across the state are Child Development Associate, healthcare pathways, including nursing assistant, medical terminology, phlebotomy,
Transportation, focusing on CDL prep for the shortage in bus drivers. Paraprofessionals, IT careers, food service, green construction, manufacturing. These are just a few examples. With increased funding, Adult Basic Ed will be able to expand the innovative programming and develop career pathways with multiple partners. ABE is also essential in serving low-income and immigrant communities. Through ABE, they have the opportunity to improve their literacy and employment skills so they can truly participate in their children's lives, the workforce, and our community. They can be our most vulnerable adults and can get lost in our systems. ABE provides opportunity and connectedness, which impacts the lives of our adult learners and our community. We can sometimes be their only lifeline and support. As a former ABE director, I have so many stories and faces that how ABE has touched their lives, changed their lives, and changed the direct trajectory of their future opportunities. ABE is an integral partner and necessary partner in the future of Minnesota. As an aside here, I will say, my son is coming back from the military and is benefiting after 5 years being deployed, coming back and being able to utilize a partnership with the ABE and a local community college to prepare for reentry. It's amazing. So adult-based education is vital to Minnesota's future. ABE supports adult learners in the future needs of the Minnesota workforce. Resources are needed. An increase of funding would allow ABE to not only sustain the current foundation of programming for our adult learners, but expand to meet the ever-changing landscape of Minnesota's economy. Every dollar provided to ABE is an investment in the future of Minnesota. Thank you again for providing me the opportunity to share with you how we value adult basic education and why we support the increase in funding. Thank you,
Ms. Steven, and good luck to your son on his return to civilian life. Heather Turngren, excuse me. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Heather Turngren. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Heather Turngren, as I've stated, and I live and work in Minneapolis. I am a fully licensed adult basic education teacher, and as other ABE teachers, we follow the same licensing requirements as our K-12 teachers do, as well as the same relicensing requirements. I have been an ABE teacher with Minneapolis Adult Education in Minneapolis Public Schools for 19 years. I'm a proud ABE teacher. In Minneapolis Adult Education, which is similar to many other ABE programs across the state of Minnesota, we serve adult students. We serve English language learners, similar to Layla, with ESL classes, and we also serve native English students, native English speaking students, looking for basic skills, GED classes, college preparation classes. As you may already know, many of the students you find in ABE classrooms across the state of Minnesota represent Minnesota's communities of color. ABE is a great way to help Minnesota close the achievement gap within our education system. It also allows students of all ages to achieve the education opportunities they may not have been able to obtain earlier. ABE is also a perfect partner with K-12 education as we help serve the parents of Minnesota's children. I feel lucky to have been able to teach classes at almost every level of ABE programming in my 19 years as an ABE teacher. Ranging from pre-literacy to college prep, I've taught classes in science, social studies, math, reading, writing, and many career pathway programming classes. We also have classes in the morning, the afternoon, the evening, even on Saturdays. We offer ABE classes when students are able to attend. My focus as an ABE teacher has always been on students and being a flexible provider for the learning of our students. This bill before you will help provide the necessary funding for ABE programs across Minnesota to continue to do the great work that the others before me have mentioned. If I had more time, I would share with you the many stories about my students and how ABE has helped them achieve their goals. But in the essence of time, I will just say this, that additional funding for ABE will help us to continue to serve adults who attend classes, and they then in turn can help with their children's education. We also will help adults achieve their employment goals and looking for more and better employment opportunities. So I'm asking all of you, please give full support of this bill. And thank you, Representative Lee, for all your support for ABE and for bringing this bill forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Turngren. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 2325? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question. This is important. Basic adult basic education, I know in my area, is important. I'm looking at lines 1.12 and 1.13. You can have carryover money from one year to the next. And how much money is in there right now?
I'm going to throw that to Mr. Strom, if you can help us with that, or Ms. Adrians.
Mr. Chair, members, with the ABE program, there are two parts to the program. There's the regular funding that goes out to the districts, and then there's this amount that's calculated as the adjustment each year that's paid out on a different level. And so it's not so much carry forward as it is that amount is used to determine the second portion of the formula that's paid out. But it's not as if it goes into reserve that builds up each year. It's part of that actual calculation. And what it's looking at there is the amount of aid in that preceding year to determine the amount that goes into that other calculation.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee, for bringing this bill. It's so important. I think everybody has value and can contribute. I do have some questions with regards to the ABE program. How many sites are there throughout the state of Minnesota? And within those sites, are there differing specialties in terms of workforce training?
You can phone a friend, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I do have a staff member from the Department of Education.
Very good. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello. My name is Brad Haskamp. Thank you for an excellent question. Around the state of Minnesota, currently we have about 330 sites for adult basic education that are serving in a variety of school district sites, community-based organizations or nonprofits, libraries, and other locations. There's a wide variety of locations across the state. Some of them are very small sites, such as our maybe workplace sites, workplace literacy sites. Others are very large, like the Hub Center in St. Paul, that is a specially designed adult school. I have to apologize. I did not hear the second part of that question.
Representative Edelson?
I think that you actually, thank you, Chair. I think you answered it quite well. The other question I have is going to the age groups. So say, for instance, there's somebody that comes in and that wants to do an ABE course, and they're 19 years old or 20. I mean, is it free for them? I guess I'm just curious what it looks like for that process.
So, excellent question. A person is technically eligible for adult basic education as long as they are no longer enrolled in K-12 or no longer required to be enrolled in K-12. And so someone between the ages of 17 through 21 is often given that choice of whether they are able to or would prefer to enroll in K-12 in lieu of adult basic education. K-12 obviously offers more comprehensive services and a lot more, such as transportation, free reduced lunch, items like that. Adult basic education typically does not have any of those additional services. So within adult basic education, most programs do not charge a fee. It is free for those individuals as long as they're eligible. However, that some of them do have materials fees or test fees. For example, if you want to test for the GED test, you would have to pay that testing fee. And that is currently, typically the sticker price for that is $120 for the full battery, but because of this ongoing subsidy through the state legislature, that goes down to about $80 per individual.
Last question, Representative Edelson.
Thank you so much. And just in terms of the workforce training piece of it, is there each site, does it specialize in a specific workforce area? Or I'm just in terms of wondering geographically what people have access to.
Mr. Haskamp.
Yeah, excellent question. Each adult basic education consortium or grantee is required to kind of target, is asked to target their workforce development services based on the industries that are in demand for that area. So in many areas though across the state, we see healthcare as a major need. So we see a lot of certified nursing assistant programs and things like that across the state. But in greater Minnesota, for example, Southwest Minnesota, green construction was a much larger industry in demand. So there was additional programs towards that area. So they really are tailored to, one, the industries that are in demand, and two, the partners that they have in those areas.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a big fan of ABE, and Representative Lee, thank you very much for bringing this bill up. I am interested in the work that you're doing with the Department of Corrections. I see that the hours of or the contract hours are highest for that department, but there seems to be only one site. Is that the case, and what is your experience and hopefully great success at with the Department of Corrections?
Excellent.
Mr. Haskamp.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. Actually, the Department of Corrections, you'll see in that the second column for this spreadsheet, it does say one consortium member. However, that doesn't mean the number of sites. That's not equal to the number of sites. Actually, there are nine Department of Corrections facilities that do offer adult basic education. Every Department of Corrections facility, every prison, with the exception of Red Wing, offers adult basic education services. And so those are well attended, and we have a very solid partnership with that agency.
Last question, Representative Sandell.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lee, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present this bill. And I just want to say thank you to the bipartisan author, the Chair, and Representative Kreisha for signing on. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Sorry about that. With that, Representative Pryor renews her motion that House File 2325, yes, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report. Members, a reminder, we reconvene, call the chair, tentatively 5:30 this evening in the basement hearing room. Cozy, quiet. With that, we are in recess. Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. I'd like to reconvene the March 27th meeting of the Education Finance Committee. I had this whole thing planned about how members were going to be in and out, but I don't think there's anybody in the audience who doesn't work here and understand that. So I'll save us some time right there and get us out just a little bit early. Representative Sandell, you are up first. Good evening, Representative Sandell. Welcome. Would you like to move House File 1838 to be before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report?
I would so. what did you say? Oh, no.
I'll take that as a yes.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Please proceed.
Well, thank you, Chair Dabney, and many thanks to my friends and fellow committee members here. I'm pleased to be here tonight to ask your support for House File 1838, a bill relating to the Minnesota Board of School Administrators, or BOSA. The Board of School Administrators is among the smallest agencies in our state, and as often the case, it has an oversized portfolio. House File 1838 is an effort to help the agency keep up with growing responsibility and an increasing demand for its services. BOSA was established in 2001 and serves as a professional service and advocacy group for more than 7,000 school administrators. The board's executive director, Dr. Anthony Kinkle, is here with me today. Dr. Kinkle was a member of the House from 1986 to 1998 and served with a couple of you. He also served two terms in the Minnesota Senate. He was away from Minnesota for a while as president of a junior college, but he's here tonight to describe the reasons and details of our and the specifics of our request. Dr. Kinkle.
Excellent. Thank you. I was going back to that. Representative Kinkle. Dr. Kinkle, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members, Tony Kinkle, executive director of the State Board for School Administrators. Ms. Chairman, I I put it on one page, so it's passed around. I know how busy you guys are this time of year. So as Representative Sandell said, this bill is to raise the fee that superintendents, principals, directors of special ed, and directors of community ed pay for their own state board. This fee has never been increased in the history of the board. It was there when I was in the Senate at $75, and it's been there ever since. This simply raises it by $25. Mr. Chairman, I put exactly where the money goes. This is going to allow us to automate our fee collection system, so your principals and superintendents will be able to pay this fee by electronic means instead of now they have to write a personal check, and we have to code that by hand. We've had about a 29% increase in ethics cases. It's going to allow us to offer a little bit more scrutiny on some of those cases. We're going to be able to increase our oversight of professional development activities. We have 1,600 different professional activities we have to approve each year. Mr. Chairman, you can see the other things. We've got some data that you all are mandating us to collect. And then finally, it's money for unexpected emergencies, such as we're redoing our rules right now. That's going to cost us $160 a page. Those kinds of things we simply don't have the budget for. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any opposition. You can see all of the associations are on board supporting raising their own fee.
Hard to argue. Is there anybody in the audience who wants to testify regarding House File 1838? Member questions regarding House File 1838. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kinkle, I was just curious about how many cases are you seeing a year from an ethics perspective? Because you said there was a 29% increase. But yeah.
Dr. Kinkle?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, last year I personally processed 130 ethics cases. Not all of them turn into actual cases. They start out as an inquiry. About half of those become an actual case that we investigate. By far, the biggest growth area for ethics complaints is in the area of from special ed parents, and secondly, bullying. And quite frankly, the backlash of people feeling our administrators are not responding as aggressively to bullying as they should be. So that's the two growth areas that I'm seeing in the last year.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson?
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for either the bill author or the testifier? Representative Sandell, any closing comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I think both of those are an excellent job, and their services are valued by their members. So I hope that the bill can be included in the omnibus bill as we go on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Thank you, Dr. Kinkle. With that, Representative Sandell renews his motion that House File 1838 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division report.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, members, House File 366 is a bill of Representative Kreisha's. Thank you, Representative Erickson, for presenting this in his absence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'd like to move House File 366 to be considered for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you very much.
So, members and Mr. Chair, this is a kind of a mistake that the department made, and they're going to testify to that. Maybe I shouldn't call it a mistake. Maybe they just didn't understand our intention, which I guess is what they said, because back in 2016, we provided $1 million to the department for grants to school districts that offered current technical programming that issued industrial certificates. And the aid that we provided was equal to $500 times the number of students in grades 9 to 12 who successfully completed one or more certificates. Well, what happened is that 277 certificates were awarded in 16 and 17, and then the department no longer reimbursed districts that had this program, and then determined that they had misunderstood the intentions, and now would agree, I think you'll hear from Ms. Snyder, that they should proceed to reimburse these districts. So what this proposal does is it clarifies that MDE may continue to award reimbursements to these school districts when the students have completed the qualifying certificate program, and then would extend the money that we set aside in 16-17 through fiscal 2020. And I would ask for your support. And I believe Ms. Snyder is willing to
looks like it
talk about the misunderstanding of intent.
All right.
And I'm glad she's here.
Ms. Snyder, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Caitlin Snyder, Minnesota Department of Education. I would co-sign what Representative Erickson just said to the committee. There is language that's current language on 2.1 to 2.3 of this bill that reference certificates earned during the current fiscal year. And when the bill was being implemented, program staff reached out to government relations and said, does this constrain us to this fiscal year? We had a lot of internal conversations about whether or not we could only administer certificates for certificates that were earned during that fiscal year, and we ultimately landed on a very narrow interpretation and said, yes, we can only give revenue for certificates earned during that fiscal year, even though the appropriation language is very clear about it being allowed for 3 years. It was a very frustrating experience for program staff because they knew that school districts were very interested in this program and they wanted to expend the funding. I believe members also have a legislative report that speaks to, unfortunately, we can't get more revenue out the door because we are interpreting this to only be for revenue or certificates earned in this fiscal year. Unbeknownst to government relations at the time, there was also conversations happening related to the budget forecast about whether or not this appropriation should cancel for the forecast. And I think it's important for members to know there's sort of a wall of information between what staff know about the forecast and what gets to non-forecast related folks, because we don't want government relations, for example, to have privileged information about what's going to be in the forecast. So during that conversation, MMB and legislative fiscal analyst decided the legislative intent was that this revenue could be earned for multiple fiscal years, that the language was a little bit unclear, but that that was the legislative intent and that it could be expended over 3 fiscal years. That interpretation very recently got back to program staff. So we're very excited about being able to get this money out the door. So you should have a letter dated March 25th, 2019. This is a notice that's going to go out in the superintendent's mail, I think next week, letting school districts know that the revenue is available with or without the legislation that's in front of you. So it is the intent of MDE to get this revenue out to school districts that can qualify. We've launched a website to gather this information and are working to get it out to school districts at this time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Snyder. I'll start with a question myself. I'm just a little unclear on the timeline and the funding here. Is, if I'm understanding it, and to the author and to Ms. Snyder, there probably are some students who earned these certificates whose school districts were not reimbursed the $500.
Correct.
Is the intent of MDE to look backwards and compensate those districts for past activities, or only to look forward and provide that reimbursement for students earning certificates this year and this current academic year and beyond?
The intent of the department, Mr. Chair, is to reach out to school districts to see what qualifying certificates were earned in fiscal 18 and fiscal 19. To reimburse for those certificates as outlined under current law.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify? All right. Any other questions from members?
No.
Ms. Snyder, do we know what the amount of unspent funds is?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's in the legislative report, but I believe about a third of the funding was expended in the year that revenue was available to school districts under the previous interpretation.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This legislation probably wouldn't be necessary, but it ensures that this process does proceed. So with that, I would ask for your support.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for stepping in for Representative Kreisha. Yes, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 366 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you, ma'am. Representative Runback. Cheryl?
Good to meet you, too. Representative Runback, you have House File. Who would like to move House File 618?
Madam Chair, I will move House File 618 for possible inclusion in a division report.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson moves House File 618 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill report. I don't see any amendments here. I'm sorry. That was my fault. We have to send it to Ways and Means so it can be re-referred to the Division on Taxes.
Oh, yes. Sorry about that. I think I did know that, too.
That was my fault. So would you like to amend your motion, Representative?
Yes, I do. I move that the motion I just made be amended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Erickson moves to moves House File 618 before the committee tonight with the intention to have it re-referred to the Division on Taxes through Ways and Means. Representative Rundeck, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to bring House File 618, which is about equitable school funding across the state and helping low property wealth districts and communities compete with those higher wealth property wealth districts so that they can close that gap and make it far more fair when it comes to proposing tax referendums for their school districts. And I think we've all heard the story, and I'm glad that Tim Strom is here. He can perhaps explain what the bill does. But it's kind of a new and a innovative approach to doing referendum equalization. So it does help the first tier and the third tier. You can see in the description of the bill. So it directs the equalization dollars to the first tier by way of a tax, attaching it to the tax rate. And as you know, a lot of suburban districts, so this will put its largest effort against the third-tier districts. Those are more often the suburban districts, and they have gone out lately, many of them, for very substantial referendum levies, and many of those have passed. And so the residents and the taxpayers have put up and demonstrated quite a considerable good-faith effort here, and done really, I think, what the state is hoping they'll do and support their schools. But this would come back then and offer some tax relief for those property taxpayers and just making it fairer across the board as they continue to pay out on that that vote. So, and it really what it does is to lower the cost of raising the same revenue that another district raises with a lot less property tax effort. So that would be how I'd explain it. I had a wonderful testifier here, but we didn't know about the time change, so he is not able to make it. But for further, and we do have the Rural Education Association, so perhaps we could do that first.
Okay. Dr. Nolan, would you like to state your name for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Fred Nolan, Executive Director of the Minnesota Rural Education Association, and I would invite the committee to pull this color one pager out of your folder, which I'll use to explain why this is so important for greater Minnesota. And I want to thank Representative Runback for bringing this forward. You're right, this is a new innovative approach, and I'm for the committee to hear it. I'll kind of walk you through the one pager without reading it to you as to why this is so important. At the top, the tax rates for greater Minnesota for operating referendums vary wildly. The measure of dispersion is standard deviation, and the standard deviation for greater Minnesota tax rates is nearly 10 times that of the metro tax rates. In fact, in that plot in the middle, which is kind of hard to see, it's a little small, you can see that the yellow dots, which are difficult to see, are very low. They're like below 0.25. But the red dots gather all over the page. And in fact, we had to cut the chart off so you could see it. There's dots above that of what you can see. And those are in greater Minnesota. I want to draw your attention to the x-axis, the one that goes across the bottom, because this is an axis of median district income, household income as gathered by the U.S. Census. And the black vertical line is the median of the 31 school districts. So you can see that the majority of the red dots are below Minnesota's median district household income. So higher tax rates are in school districts with lower median incomes. 618 addresses this by focusing on the tax rate, and how it does this is shown in the lower right side of the page. The important thing to note is this tax share of the operating referendum in House File 618 is not related to how many students are in school, which is the traditional way of determining school wealth. This treats a taxpayer as a taxpayer regardless how many students are in school. It creates a maximum tax rate for equalized portion of a percent of the referendum market value. And it's basically 1% for every $100 a pupil raised, which is why in the chart at the top you'll see that it's 3% for the first three, 8% for the next year, and up to 15%, up to 25% of the formula. So it creates actually a smooth formula, not one where there's gaps. And also, it leaves the current equalization tiers as kind of a floor under which no one can fall. So the tiers create a minimum, this creates a maximum. And in the, you can see in the map how the results work out across the state. Taxpayers in 261 school districts will receive a reduction, some pretty small. But there'll be 37 school districts, primarily in greater Minnesota, where taxpayers will see, homeowners will see a $100 reduction in their current operating rates. In summary, House File 618 provides equal tax rates for operating referendums for equal dollars raised per pupil, regardless of what school district you're in. This greatly reduces high tax rates for small rural districts, and in doing so, provides a greater state share of operating referendum revenue in districts which have lower median household incomes. So I urge you for these reasons to include House File 618 and move it on to Ways and Means and include it in the tax bill if that's where it's heading. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Representative Reinbeck, did you have, I see Brad Lindell here for Equity and Excellence, or?
Mr. Lindell, I had been told would be here, but I don't see him.
Okay.
He may have.
He may have shown up at five.
I was here at 5:30. Okay. He wasn't here.
He wasn't.
Was a problem with our email servers, so the listserv that went out didn't get to members. But I know your LA and other author LAs were contacted. Sure. So, and right. I see Mr. Lindell coming down right now.
Okay.
Perhaps he could be available for questions. If the members have any questions, okay. And I would direct, you know, folks to the runs that mm-hmm. show how this spreads out and distributes across the school districts.
Did you want Mr. Strom to explain anything else? I know you had mentioned.
Mr. Strom, if you had some additional things that you could add, that would be helpful.
Thank
you.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, we thought it might be helpful to have a printout so that folks could see the difference in the equalization. The printout's oriented with the second to right column or second to left column showing the pupil count, and then as you come across on the pupil on the printout, you'll see the referendum amount in the fourth column there, and you can see how that varies by district. And then the printout pairs the levy under the current law with that in House File 16, and you can see that the rates using a constant rate against the tax base instead of an equalizing factor, primarily with the numbers that were chosen, primarily affect the first and the third tiers. So if you look at the top line there, you can see at the state total a $10 million drop in the first tier levy. And if you look over to the third tier levy, about a $20 million drop there. Then those are split down on metro, non-metro. and then the district is the districts are listed, and for those that are relatively low value districts, you can see that they've got a bigger drop in the levy because of the way the equalization plays through with the tax rate.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to add anything to this conversation? Mr. Lindell, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Scott Tillman, who was scheduled to testify, could have made the 5:30 hearing, but he was unable to make the 6:45. He had to do something back in his district, so he will not be here. Schools for Equity and Education, as many of you know, we've worked a lot on the equalization issue over the years, very, very much. And I think that what Representative Rundbeck has come forward with here is a kind of an interesting approach, a different approach. I think the other approach that was pursued by Representative Hewitt in his bill is the more traditional approach. I think that also, I think it would be interesting to see Representative Hewitt's bill is a more robust bill in terms of funding. So it would be interesting to see what this approach would mean given the same level of funding. We're all for equalization. I think where this bill looks more at the first and third tiers more than the Hewitt bill did, which looks more at the second tier. And I think that that's, again, where the legislature views the folks that need the property tax relief the most. We think the second tier is a good place, but also let's not say the first tier is a bad place. I think the question as we see going forward is that the in the governor's budget, he showed how the gap between the 5th and 95th is growing again. And that's because the 724, the districts at the highest levels are now passing levies again. The districts that have the 724 are kind of stationary again. We need to find a way to get that folks at the 724 moving up. And again, that's the way to do that is through equalization. And so we're again, multiple approaches here. Leave it to the will of the committee to figure out which is the best one and which fits in your set of priorities and what direction you want to pursue.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Members, any questions? I actually have just one quick one. Are there some districts that would actually see an increase? I'm looking at the Tier 1 in particular on number 23, Frazee. It looks like the number goes up instead of down like everything else. I was just wondering. Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, could you repeat the district?
The on line 23, Frazee.
Frazee. Madam Chair, that shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I'm trying to think of what could possibly have caused that. Do you have whiteout?
I'm sorry. It was probably just a mistake in the runs. I figured that wouldn't happen.
I'm not quite sure what happened there. I'll have to look into the programming. I've made a mistake there. But it should go down for either be the same or go down for everyone in that tier. And I'm not quite sure why that happened.
Mr. Strom, it's okay. any other questions? Representative Marquardt.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So my understanding is correct on this. The floor is the existing law, and the tax rate would only increase it. So I think that's where there probably wouldn't be a reduction, but there may not be an increase necessarily. Would that be correct, Mr. Nolan, or Representative Dunbar?
Mr. Nolan.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, that is correct. If you look at the text of 618, the tiers are not stricken. They're there. And communicating with Senate staff, the counterpart to Tim Strom, who is Mr. Bjorn Arneson, the intent was not to take those away. Those become the base, and it's possible to increase those and put this as kind of a cap. So it kind of brings the tax rates closer together with less dispersion. But it was never intended that any would receive less equalization.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Charlotte. Any other member questions? And So we've, I think we've exhausted the question at the table. Representative Rombach, final word.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair, and I think this is another good attempt, and hopefully we can see some actual results here and making sure that we are reducing the situations of haves and have-nots. We don't want to see that happen in our school districts. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Representative Rombach. And Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 618 move to the Committee on Ways and Means with a recommendation be referred to the Division on Taxes. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you,
and
Minister.
Then next we have Chair Davy. So then we're going to move on to Representative Nordis. House File 1907. Representative Nornes, would you like to make a motion to move House File 1907 before the committee to lay over for possible inclusion in a division report?
Madam Chair, I would like to do that, yes.
Representative Nornes moves House File 1907 before the committee. And I understand you have some testifiers. Would you like to proceed and explain your bill, and we can move to testifiers?
I believe we probably have two testifiers, but I have one main one.
Okay.
Who drove the longest distance all the way from Fergus Falls.
Wonderful.
So this has to do with concurrent enrollment. Several years ago, the legislature saw fit to authorize a pilot program up in our part of the state, and this pertains to that program, and the funding part of it is due to expire, the unused portion, and we're going to attempt to, with your permission, to reallocate that money. So I'd like to have a testifier from Fergus Falls, Jeremy Kopisch, tell you the story.
Yeah, sounds good. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good evening, committee. My name is Jeremy Kovash. I'm the executive director at Lakes Country Service Cooperative, as Representative Nornes mentioned, office in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. In the 2016 supplemental omnibus budget bill, the legislature allocated $3 million to Lakes Country Service Cooperative in one-time money to meet the needs and assist 90 school districts in West Central and Northwest Minnesota of their concurrent enrollment instructors through a partnership with Minnesota State University Moorhead. We began immediately working with MSUM to develop master's level coursework. Amended in 2017 in the omnibus bill, the E-12 omnibus education bill, the legislature again allocated an additional $750,000 to develop a statewide partnership. This effort was to continue to work in response to the Higher Learning Commission's clarification regarding concurrent enrollment instructors, primarily that they earn at least 18 master's level credits in each of the content areas that they teach our dually enrolled students across Minnesota. Lake Country has worked diligently with our partner MSUM to develop outstanding online educational curriculum to allow eligible secondary school teachers to attain graduate credit at a reduced rate in multiple content areas. As of today, we have worked with 9 departments at MSUM to develop content. We have course offerings in math, history, English, communications, biology, political science, business, chemistry, and just this spring, art. All content will qualify and contribute to teachers meeting the Higher Learning Commission's requirements. We are at or near MSUM's capacity with about 15 courses each semester, and this summer we will offer 22 courses as teachers have a little bit more time in the summer to take some graduate level courses. To date, the Northwest Regional Partnership has enrolled 605 teachers across Minnesota from 196 school districts. These teachers have enrolled in 86 courses as detailed above and have earned just shy of 4,000 credits toward approval to meet the Higher Learning Commission's requirements. Additionally, the Metro EXU has worked with several higher education institutions across the state with the statewide partnership and has enrolled 115 teachers and granted 495 credits, so just shy of 4,500 credits. We are not here today to ask for additional funding, but simply more time. We, representing K-12 teachers and their best and brightest students, effectively worked in partnership with higher education. We continue to develop courses and attract additional high school teachers. By June 30th, we will expend approximately $2 million of the $3 million originally allocated, and Metro Etsu will expend about $350,000 of their $750,000 allocation. We shared that with them in the Northwest Partnership, or in the statewide partnership. We are simply asking for two more years to expend these dollars, continue to serve our schools, students, and taxpayers by maintaining and enhancing our concurrent enrollment programs across Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration with House File 1907. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kovash, and hopefully you'll have safe travels home, too, since the weather's finally turning nice.
Thank you. I'll be back in the morning, by the way.
Representative Nornes, did you have another testifier? You mentioned
I do have another, if you have time, Madam Chair. Okay. Joe Nathan has indicated he would be willing to testify on behalf of the concurrent program, and appreciate you being here.
Mr. Nathan, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, representatives, it's good to see you again. I was here earlier today to praise the concurrent enrollment approach that this state has used for several decades. I showed you this chart. My name is Joe Nathan, by the way. I direct the Center for School Change. I've been a public school teacher, administrator, PTA president, and been active in other ways in Minnesota. I also write a newspaper column for a number of newspapers. And I just want to briefly remind you of this chart and of the research that's summarized on the back. I want to point out one additional thing that I did not mention this morning, which is that the University of Minnesota has done research about concurrent enrollment and shows that when you look at the percentage of people who actually earn college credit, who are across the board, whether they're white kids or African-American kids or Hispanic kids or kids of color, the youngsters who participate in concurrent enrollment do far better in terms of actually earning credit than do youngsters who participate in AP or IB. And that's because, in part, AP and IB require passing of a very difficult test one day in the entire year. And that's not to be critical of AP or IB. These programs have been around for a long time. But if we want to not only help youngsters learn about the challenge of college, but actually experience a true college experience, college credit comes about when youngsters take a semester-long or a year-long course and have to day after day do the assignments, take the tests, and do other things. It does not come down to one day, one test. It's not a matter of which is more rigorous, which is less rigorous. It's a matter of which is more consistent with college procedures. As some of you know, I have taught at the elementary, secondary, college, and university level for off and on for 49 years, and I have no vested interest in any of these programs. I have no financial interest in any of them, but I salute Representative Nornes and a number of others of you, including Representative Dabney, who is a longtime supporter of concurrent enrollment, because this is a program, along with PSEO, that really helps youngsters understand the full college experience. And so, thank you for listening. I appreciate what Representative Nornes and his colleagues have done. I appreciate the opportunity to work with Fred Nolan and others on this issue over a number of years, and I encourage you to strongly consider including this in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Is there anybody else in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Members, do we have any questions? Everybody's so quiet tonight.
Really down.
We are like this at night.
Seeing no questions at the table, Representative Nornes, do you have any final?
I do not, Madam Chair. Are we filling time waiting for?
Well, I was going to briefly.
I think we could think of something.
Okay, so we'll move your bill. Would you like to renew your motion?
I would. I'm not quite sure what it is. No.
Representative Nornes renews his motion to move House to. To lay over House File 618 for possible inclusion.
Okay, I do make that motion. Yes.
Thank you. So we are laying House File 618 over for possible inclusion. And now we have
Thank you.
Chair Dabney.
No, I need to go present a bill.
Okay, so now we are going to recess briefly until to the call of the chair. I don't have to do that.
Lord have mercy.
What is the Representative Erickson can present for him.
He's on a roll. He's looking out. There we go.
I don't get
all right.
All right, members. I know we have to take care of one piece of business. That last motion we moved the wrong bill number. So we're going to move the right bill number now. So with the last motion, House File 1907, this is Representative Norna's bill, is laid over before I'm renewing the motion to lay it over before the committee for possible inclusion in the future division report. So all those in favor, any question on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Now we have Chair Dabney, House File 1735.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House File 1735 be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future division report.
Wonderful. Chair Dabney, would you like to explain your bill?
Thank you very much. This bill was brought to me by People for PSEO, a youth-led organization looking to expand opportunities for students across the state to participate in the post-secondary enrollment options program. Particularly, members will remember that PSEO in the focus here is on students who are college ready in high school but are looking for opportunities outside of the high school in a local college institution, whether it's a private or a public institution, whether it's a two-year or a four-year. Gives them an opportunity to be on campus, to receive the academic rigor and challenge, but also get to find out what that feels like and what that's like. I've got several testifiers who are ready to come on up because the youth voice is far more powerful in the consideration of this than mine, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. Please sit down, join us, state your name for the record, and proceed.
If you just want to grab me.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Zeke Jackson. I'm a current senior at Little Falls Community High School and a full-time PSEO student at the University of Minnesota. I'm also the current executive director of People for PSEO. Our organization is a statewide nonprofit made up of parents, PSEO alumni, PSEO advocates, and current PSEO students representing over 40 different high schools. Our organization has three goals: to promote the PSEO program among families, students, educators, and the general public, to encourage the refinement, expansion, and improvement of the PSEO program through the dissemination of information to legislators and policymakers, and lastly, to encourage greater equity and access to PSEO for all students across Minnesota. Before I discuss my experience with the program, I want to highlight two handouts that you might have in front of you. The first piece, titled the MDE, the Minnesota Department of Education Statewide Four-Year Graduation Rates, shows how participating in even one CTE or PSEO course can drastically affect high school four-year graduation rates. The second handout, published by the Center for School Change, shows how dual credit courses reduce the cost of higher education and increases the likelihood of students entering to enter a four-year, two-year, or certificate program. Now, the PSEO program has been of particular benefit for me because it has allowed me to maximize my potential as both a student and as a professional while allowing me to learn alongside students who are just as passionate about their education as I am. House File 1735 is important to Minnesota because it is all about closing the opportunity gaps and building the world's best workforce. The three common sense changes provided in this bill of a particular importance because they increase PSEO accessibility for both low-income students and students from rural communities such as my own. As someone who's currently participating in PSEO and as someone who has heard countless stories from other students, I know that, without a doubt, one of the greatest challenges that students face while learning about PSEO is the dissemination of accessible and timely PSEO information. The first provision of this bill aims to resolve one of the problems under that umbrella topic. Right now, districts are required to disseminate updated PSU information to students and to families by March 1st. And there are a couple problems with this. First off, some districts actually have their students register for next year courses well before March 1st, some of them as early January. So by requiring districts to disseminate updated information by 3 weeks prior to next year's course registration, students will learn about PSU at the same time that they're thinking about what they want to do with the next couple years of their life. Furthermore, there are some colleges who start accepting PSU applications well before March 1st. The U of M is a great example of that. They open registration on February 1st. So there are potentially students out there who are missing out on applying to the PSU program just because of a simple lack of information. So this provision of House File 1735 is super important to our state because it will help students and families make informed decisions about PSEO in a timely manner. Thank you for taking the time to hear me, and I hope that you have some questions for us. I'd like to turn over my time now to ASEA to discuss the other two provisions of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Asiya Brown, a junior at Step Academy Charter School in St. Paul and a full-time PSEO student at the University of Minnesota. Thank you for permitting me to testify today. I'll be discussing the other two sections of HF 1735, which would be the online course revision and the transportation reimbursement section. Now, seeing as online courses did not exist back in 1985, we believe that an update is needed to modernize this PSEO law. There are some colleges that are restricting the number of online courses that students can take, such as St. Cloud State University, who limits students to one online course per semester. This makes an extreme impact on the PSEO accessibility for rural students, who often travel over 40 miles just to get to campuses such as the University of Minnesota or others in the metro area. If colleges enforce the same policies for PSEO students as their undergraduate peers in regards to online courses, students would be able to commute less, work more, and tailor their college schedule to what works best for themselves. For our Senate hearing, we had a PSEO student from St. Cloud State University who was able to discuss how their policy affected her personally, but unfortunately she was not able to be here today. Now the next topic that I'll be moving over to is the transportation reimbursement section of this bill. This one affects me the most, so I'll be sharing a personal experience. For me, transportation, in the mornings I'm driven, and in the afternoons after my classes are completed, I take the city bus home using a university-issued U-Pass, which is around $114 a semester. Now, this current situation puts a financial burden on my parents as they pay for my sister, as paying for my sister and I's bus card each semester is a cost they didn't need to pay before and is something that is become an issue for them. Campus parking also isn't an option due to how expensive it is, ranging from $69 to $134 a month. So bus is the only option that we have. It's the best option. And there are many others like me who don't do PSEO at the college they want or even in general just because of the transportation inconvenience that they may face, especially compared to transportation at high schools where they normally either pay for their bus card or just have a bus come pick them up for free. Transportation reimbursements would greatly impact my situation as well as the situation of many other current or prospective PSEO students like me. It would help me due to the fact that I'm a low-income student as defined by qualifying for free or reduced lunch, and therefore the transportation reimbursements would apply and my bus card would be paid for and my sister's as well. They would also remove the burden from my parents' shoulders of having to worry about transportation costs, and the transportation reimbursements would cover the bus card costs, so we wouldn't need to worry about that. So overall, both sections, both the online course changing, and the transportation reimbursements would greatly help many PSEO students like me and many others. So again, thank you for allowing me to testify this evening, and I hope my experience and the experience of many others are considered when deciding on the future of HF 1735. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Representative Dabney, is that it for testifying?
That is it for testifying. Fires, Madam Chair.
Is there anybody else in the audience would like to testify? Mr. Heller, do you have something to say about House File 1705 in the room? 1735.
My name is Rick Heller. I officially represent the twice exceptional people with print disabilities. You will find that in House File 1370 on line 118 or House File 255, lines 213. We get it, go to the bill, 2.22, online courses. Who's the responsibility? Obviously, you don't have to yield to the question, but there's always a question or a query about this. Online courses as it relates to people with print disability and twice exceptional. Twice exceptional students are always going to public, going to higher education, and since online courses may be done in a school, how will they make sure that these students acquire the same information, engage, interactions, and enjoy the same services? Because if these are twice exceptional students that are gifted and talented and are interested in higher education process, who will assure that when we use online courses that they will be compliant to 508 and web content accessibility guidelines?
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Is there anyone else? Otherwise, members, are there any questions? Representative Richardson, her brain just shut off. I'm sorry.
Not really a question, but just more of a comment. We were actually sharing before you started testifying. I was a PSEO student as well and did 2 years full-time at the University of Minnesota, and it's great to see that you are out raising awareness about the opportunity about PSEO, because when I did it years ago, a lot of people weren't aware, and just even to be able to look at easing some of those transportation burdens is very helpful as well. So thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Representative Richardson.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Dabney, do you have a final word?
Madam Chair and members, we've, as a committee, taken placed a commitment on looking at barriers to student success this year and looking to see what barriers we can help peel away. And I hope that some of the barriers identified in this bill are those that we can take down to allow more student access to rigorous coursework. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Dabney renews his motion to lay over House File 1735 for possible inclusion in a fusion division report. And then, Chair Dabney, did you have any closing scheduling issues or comments for the committee, or should I just use that?
Let me start with an apology for the delay. It was just unfortunate communication and timing that caused the committee to go into recess tonight, and to everyone, I apologize for delaying. I guess my final comments is go home!
And we are adjourned.
Your families miss you!
We're adjourned.